All this played back in a feedback loop from which there was no apparent escape. It was an unending replay, made worse by the realization there was nothing on earth or under heaven that could make this heinous crime undone. Nothing is stronger than reality. My solemn friend in his tarnished robes began to see that it was beyond my powers to save these poor victims of their own action. But at least you must return and warn and report about this misery you have seen here in order to save people from their folly. Every person in the world must know that God is mercy and love, and nothing must be stronger than love. Unless people know the truth, then many more will have his fate and many more will suffer and add to the numbers of the condemned in this region. It will get bigger and bigger. I told him that I was probably the most unlikely person to convince the brothers and sisters of his faith, and that he should try to find and convince somebody of his own faith to assist him. I told him that whatever I reported would only be seen as propaganda of the enemy and would have little effect in changing any behavior. The man cast his head down and looked at the helpless pile of wriggling flesh. I felt sorry for this man and wished with all my heart that he could find extra help. I looked at the miserable soul who was trapped in the pile of wriggling and smoldering limbs and felt a wave of sorrow and sincere compassion, and then directed my love towards him. I was surprised by the light emanating from my hand and lighting the region. In the light I could see faces emerging from many more piles such as this. Lost, anguished souls turning towards me with their hands outstretched, reaching for the light. That was all I could do, but I hoped with all my heart that in some way it would break the horrific loop and free these people, who in the end were victims themselves. I walked through the vast killing field of misery, sending waves of light and hoping that through some mysterious way they would do some good and relieve some of this monstrous misery. While I was doing so, I was praying inside my heart that people would learn and understand the key tenet of their religions, which was love and not hate. After death, we no longer have the filters of our physical brains. Consciousness becomes like an open book. The moment we recall any of our entangled actions, it triggers a deluge of information that will flood our conscious awareness and create our world. We are inevitably exposed to the complete network of entanglement we have created. It is very hard to escape this loop until our consciousness transcends to a much higher level. In most cases, this is only possible if we are able to deal with our identification effectively and successfully. Of course, if our action created victims who suffered, we will have to find a way to obtain our victims' forgiveness. If the victims themselves are in a lower dimensional state of consciousness brought about by our action, this is inevitably hard to obtain. We may plead and beg and try all kinds of things to make amends, but until our victims release us, we will be bound by our action. This can go on for a very long time indeed. The more suffering we create, the greater the numbers of our victims, the harder we have to work to shake off the consequential entanglement with our deeds. Of course, we have to bear in mind that each one of us may have been guilty of a crime or misdemeanor at one stage in our career of becoming evolved individuals. In my previous book, I described how I had become a member of a gang of revolutionaries in the Middle Ages who made it their moral quest to ransack rich estates and kill the landowners in order to liberate the repressed peasants. I then mentioned how one landowner had turned up in my present life and destroyed my career. My out-of-body experience had traced the root of entanglement, which stretched over hundreds of years. So what can we do to disentangle ourselves from our ill-conceived actions? The answer for this lies in our service and our heartfelt blessing. Our quiet service to others, putting them first without claiming credit, is an effective way. We perform our service quietly, because we don't want to compromise the service by being perceived as irritating do-gooders and in the end being told to mind our own business. We can provide service in the most innocuous kind of ways. Once, as a young man hitchhiking through England, I caught a bus on the Isle of Wight. At the end of the bus ride, the driver, seeing me carrying my backpack, stopped me and started chatting. He then handed me a small glass tube containing dozens of layers of fine sands in various colors. He told me that these were all the different layers of sand that could be found if I went down to the beach. I was moved by his thoughtfulness and kindness and thanked him. When I came down to the beach, I was overcome with awe at the grand spectacle of the oversized and grandiose work of art nature had presented me with. I felt an incredible thrill, and in my heart I showed my sincere gratitude to the driver, and still to this day feel a kind of cheery fondness for him when I think of it. Another time I received a call by a scammer who tried to persuade me to hand over the login details to my computer so he could help me to clean up viruses. He claimed that a routine scan showed that my computer was infected and that they could fix it. I instantly saw his true intent and started listening to his patter. As he explained some technical detail, I received the image of him sitting in a dark and windowless dungeon, the walls made out of resentment, anger and hatred, and being animated by his many victims' ill feelings towards him in the form of sinister gargoyles and nagging monsters rising from the stone, shouting and swearing abuse at him. He was unable to escape from his prison. After he had finished his sales pitch, I gently put it to him whether he had ever considered how his victims would feel when they discovered the damage caused by his crime. When he didn't reply, I sensed an element of surprise, and I suggested he could start making amends by helping other people who were in real need and putting the money he had defrauded to good use. After a few seconds, the line went quiet, and I wondered whether this little service of mine would be bearing fruits. Of course, the opposite is true as well. If we create positive and beneficial outcomes for the people we entangle with, we will equally benefit from their joys, liberation, health and enrichment we have created. This is inevitably played out on a much higher dimensional level. Helping others, sending out love and kindness, is a powerful way to make sure we experience all the positive feedback that results from this. It is not as clear-cut as it sounds, though. Action demands wisdom. Let's say we feel in a generous mood and give someone money and they in turn use it to buy a gun, which they use to kill somebody. Will we be indelibly linked to their crime? The answer is, I don't know. That's why I think there are no rules that can be laid down in stone, passed as a law to guide our action. Reality is an incredibly fine and complex mechanism, and the safest way is to rely on inner wisdom sent from the heart to guide our discriminate action. Religions have always endeavored to lay down laws and a code of morality. But the universal laws cannot be defined in human language. They are multi-dimensional and reach way beyond our level of understanding. What I am delivering is just a broad outline, which in Eastern philosophy has been referred to as the law of karma, and in science is known as the law of cause and effect. It is only when we reach the higher realm beyond duality that we transcend these laws and our understanding becomes clear, because then all our action will be guided, unselfishly, from a spontaneous wisdom level and in tune with the natural flow of the greater consciousness, which requires no deliberation of what is good or bad. It simply acts in terms of what is required and in harmony with the dynamic processes of reality. All our actions then are free, and even if somebody died as a result of our actions, perhaps in an accident, if these actions were in tune with the greater workings of reality, we will never be affected by any resulting entanglement. One thing we have to remember when contemplating the consequences of psychological and spiritual entanglement is that at the root of everything lies a universal force that can only be described as infinite grace, in the face of which even the most gruesome occurrences on Earth, in the universe and other levels of non-physical reality are little more than a projection of drama, an illusion, a movie played out against the multi-dimensional screen of consciousness. They are part of a much greater play which we can only see from the higher viewpoints, playing fields of the afterlife using the lucid dream state and hobbies for meditation provides the most powerful platform to launch awareness into the most sublime spiritual regions imaginable, for the simple reason that there are no longer any ties to the physical body. It is like launching a rocket from space, where it no longer has to overcome the gravity of Earth. These may be the greatest benefits of out-of-body states, which are often overlooked. Using the OB state for meditation is the most effective way to spiritualize your consciousness and enter the highest states of your inner being. Out-of-body travels provide the most compelling, authentic and immersive preview of our afterlife states. Because all our usual, often vastly enhanced, sense perceptions are applied, we are able to memorize and record the reality as if it were happening here on Earth, provided of course we apply the necessary recall practice. What makes gathering day two of our non-physical realities such a challenge are the infinite varieties of perspectives, the frequent quite surreal phenomena encountered and the often unusual sense perception sometimes filtered through completely new types of feelings and emotions. All this combined can make such reporting come across as fantastical and unreal but, as with science, it is essential to keep an open mind and not simply dismiss such reporting as hallucination and fantasy until it is absolutely proven to be such. Considering what it may have sounded like when the first explorers returned home from faraway continents, when describing horses with extremely long necks, cats the size of donkeys or chickens the size of horses. We can easily imagine the disbelief of our ancestors, before giraffes, lions and ostriches became widely known and accepted. In addition to this, whatever we see and encounter in our non-physical realities is often observed while being modified by our state of mind and emotions, as well as in an expanded state of consciousness. On the other hand, we should avoid building new belief systems around such reporting and establishing new dogma. Until a consensus base is established, all such reporting should simply be treated as data. My own data gathering reveals to me that our afterlife is much vaster in terms of experiential possibilities and potentials for exploration than our physical world, and is truly infinite. The few stories I have brought back are poor examples of what can be experienced once we free ourselves from our self-imposed limitations, which really means nothing is impossible and any fantasy can be experienced and realized as actual reality. After death, once liberated from our confined ego-focused awareness, we will enter a limited only by our willingness to explore and the power of our imagination. On higher dimensional levels, our imagination becomes a powerful engine, shaping our environments, which are just as hard and real as anything our physical reality can offer. When combined with the cooperative imagination of others, we will come across vast consensus environments, which will put anything created on Earth into the shade. That is not just restricted to art, architecture and the cities, but many other things for which there is no equivalent on this planet Earth. For many of the environments I have visited, I could only really give testimony of them by reproducing them as images. In our verbal descriptions, we quickly run out of words and adjectives, such as beautiful, awe-inspiring, magnificent, etc. Here language, even in the hands of a poet, will never be able to paint the subtle hues and atmospheres, the way the grass yields underfoot, the way colors percolate into different shapes to form new structures, the way new emotions are brought into awareness by the sight of strange landscapes or mind-bending features never seen before. We will encounter new feelings we never even knew we were capable of, as things experienced in non-physical realities have no precedence whatsoever and, as a result, defy conventional description. The old adage that it has to be seen and experienced to be believed holds absolutely true when visiting areas of some of these vast and strange lands. We find lands shaped out of emotions, sad lands and happy lands and many emotions in between. We will only become aware of such feeling when we visit the territories that evoke them. The closest equivalent we will find here is when encountering avant-garde art or new, never-before-seen works of revolutionary architecture, perhaps space phenomena revealed by the latest, most powerful telescopes or sea creatures from an ocean depth never reached previously. We are only just beginning to enter the new frontiers of consciousness, where we have to accommodate completely alien states of awareness, where one mode of perception can actually shape the appearance of objects, where thought can alter reality and inquiry can lead to instant results, where when we are sad, we may find ourselves resting under a sad tree and when we rejoice, we may be showered with blossoms of a happy tree. Our new frontiers are so complex and bewildering that our task ahead will be the biggest challenge of the whole history in our civilization. It would be challenging enough if we were only dealing with one new dimension. Instead, when uncoupling ourselves from our physical body, we are confronted with multi-dimensional realities with new sets of laws and vastly diverse sets of presentations. We will learn that we are able to energize ourselves with the essence from a higher dimension, which will make us radiate like a sun on a lower dimension, reported on later. Mercifully, nature has put in place a system that only enables us to move as far as our inner constitution will allow. Otherwise, we may fare like Icarus of Greek mythology. With the right preparation, we may reach the glorious heights of the mystics, or, at least, encounter realms where human minds have burst all limitations and brought to bear their most fantastical imaginations, made real and manifest. I have wandered through cities where an unearthly light was simply part of their character and atmosphere, where elaborate architecture and structures with haunting elaborations have been engraved into my memory forever. I have been enlisted in games and participated in public displays that were curiously in sync with who I am, and I have been introduced to people who had known me long before I was even born. When we shed our bodies and escape from the narrow views of our preconceptions, we will find wonders beyond comprehension. It often feels that the treasures and objects of art and architecture that we find on Earth are simply no more than faint sketches of what is possible compared to what can be witnessed over there. For a start, in the non-physical we don't have to contend with the limitations of physical laws or financial and economic restraints, lack of resources and time. We can come across the most elaborate constructions with breathtaking detail, built from precious materials which simply don't exist in our world. As a practicing artist, I am addicted to watching the latest Hollywood fantasy movies to see what my colleagues have come up with and what they might be up to next. It is safe to say that everything we see in the latest science fiction and fantasy films can and may already be a reality on the non-physical levels we can visit and walk through. My own visual work, involving virtual reality, is to make the images I have brought back from my journeys become three-dimensional reality for people to explore and enjoy. But clearly they too will only be a faint glimmer of the actual thing. No doubt as more of us explore our last frontiers and as these become a new field in our scientific interest, research will powerfully affect and inevitably transform our culture, society and politics. By the time our technology has evolved enough to enter virtual realities without a facial mask or glasses, we will have tapped into areas of our brains to open the portals to non-physical realities, where we may travel to and fro at will and communicate with our dead relatives. When this happens, everything we know now will have changed. I often imagine the benefits these unearthed treasures can bring to our civilization, our evolution and our culture in general. I fantasize of being able to source a wealth of information not accessible to us as yet, just by being able to look into our past history and the evolution of our planet, to solve insolvable problems by being able to shift our focus into unknown levels, to explore space without employing cumbersome and costly space technology. I imagine how it will impact on our consciousness and awareness when we realize there is no death and that we are all part of the same energy operating in individual configurations. So let us explore a bit further into the mysteries of our non-physical realities. Presently we are a primitive species, trapped in prejudices and strange belief systems, dominated by unconscious forces, guided blindly by energies we do not understand and have no control over. But we can start from humble beginnings to take charge over our destinies. The 21st of December 2008, next headline, Lower Dimension Currency. I found it hard to go to sleep. My mind had been milling over the suffering caused by negative beliefs triggered by a TV documentary the previous evening. When I next looked at my watch, it was 3 o'clock a.m. I decided to go into my meditation room to meditate. I tuned into a bright light right in the center of my head and allowed my focus to rest there without forcing my attention. After about 45 minutes, I went back to bed. I had vivid, restless dreams and finally got up at about 5:30 a.m. to meditate again. After about 1 hour I thought it would be prudent to catch some more sleep so I wouldn't be too tired the next day. When OBs become part of who you are and an integral part of your life then, in my case at least, your inner code of conduct is just as relevant on the non-physical level as it is on the physical. Almost as soon as I fell asleep, I was semi-lucid and aware of a number of women trying to seduce me. I was slightly overwhelmed by two very attractive ladies who tried to involve me in their sexual fantasies. They were young and vivacious. In my non-physical condition I too seemed to be young and in the prime of my youth, but I was also keenly aware of my marriage vows to my wife of 34 years. I used all my effort to gain full lucidity, but the women's combined efforts of seduction made me hover at the edge of losing awareness again until I finally forced myself to focus on my hands to gain full waking consciousness. Not surprisingly, my attention on becoming aware disrupted the game with the two women. I apologized to them and said I needed to attend to family matters and sent a clear picture over to them that I was married. The two women laughed and decided to play along without me. I was aware that these women were no lucid dream characters, but as real as I was. Being a faithful husband, I felt it prudent to leave them to their own vices. I emerged into an open square. Judging by the surroundings, I was on a lower dimensional counterpart of our physical world, but I did not recognize the town, only that everything was exactly as one would expect in any city in England. There was a group of young men in their late 20s or early 30s who I decided to interview before moving on. I still had many questions regarding the level that was so close to our Earth and what made it different. I asked a young man with dark hair and everyday street clothing whether he knew that he was dead, which he confirmed. What make this world different from Earth? I wanted to know. Nothing really, came the answer, except all the usual benefits of not having to work or worry about your health, money or career. He then showed me a medium-sized boat with a wooden hull he had just purchased, which was moored to a small landing bridge. I was surprised by the term he used, purchase. Do you have money here, then? Kind of, he said. He told me there is some form of currency, which he couldn't explain and sounded different from the kind of currency we are used to on our physical world. Things still have to be made here, and it requires effort, focus and concentration, like my boat here. I didn't make it. I became aware that on this dimension everything was still very much more physical than one would expect from a non-physical level and, instead of manifesting simply by thought, as on the higher dimensions, there still seemed to be an element of effort involved. As my interview continued, I saw a group of interested bystanders forming around us. They seemed to be aware that I was not from their reality system and still in possession of a physical body. I noticed very few people around here took advantage of the art of flying and gave a quick demonstration by taking to the air and circling over their heads before landing on the ground. Too much effort, one person said after I rejoined their group. Can't see any reason at all why we suddenly should behave like birds. He had a valid point and I realized the very basic dimension I was in, one where physical laws, habits and behaviors were still very much in evidence and the people living here were quite content continuing to live the lives they had been used to. One man in a blazer asked me whether I would be interested in taking a ride on his boat. He promised that this place here was just as good as my Earth. He invited me on board his motorboat, which had two levels and plenty of seats to accommodate all his friends. We embarked on a short journey down a wide and open river until it branched off and we came to a halt underneath a large open bridge crossing the water. Everybody looked at a small group of people standing on the bridge. I became aware of a strange mixture of sadness and decorum. I asked a fellow passenger what this was all about. He told me that the people on the bridge were crossing over, going to another level, and some of them were friends of theirs. I was touched by the farewell and thought to myself that physical death is not the only time people depart from one another, But at least here they knew that departure was only a temporary affair and that they could still contact each other if they wanted to. Seeing the people crossing a bridge in order to get to a higher level, I remembered my past experiences that by employing the symbolic way of climbing, such as to the top level of a large building, one could find a way to the next level above. Rather than using meditation, I wanted to test this theory and climbed up the stairs to the upper deck of the boat, hoping that with the right attitude, it would trigger in my mind the idea of rising. But obviously intent and hope are two different things and my experiment had little effect. Instead I thanked the captain for the invitation to travel with him but told him that my time was limited and I had to leave. I took to the air and returned to the square. In order to transcend this level I decided to use the Om chant. The moment I uttered the word, the ground began to shake and the whole square was lit up. I was surprised by the powerful effect my chant had on the whole area and I saw on the astonished faces of the people gathered here that they had probably never witnessed an effect like this before. Regardless, from deep within I conjured up the holy mantra again and the air vibrated and the whole surrounding was cast into a brilliant light. Some people turned away or shielded their eyes. Then the scene faded and instead I was surrounded by tapestries of millions of changing images and pattern, blazing with glorious lights in vivid colors. When with the next chant I willed my spiritual eyes open to discern my new environment, I discovered, to my regret, that I had opened my physical eyes. No date entered, Bridging Dimensions Meditation 4:30 a.m., for 1 hour. I felt tired so decided to return to bed. To capitalize on my meditation, I made a firm affirmation that after falling asleep I would achieve lucidity in my dream. It took about half an hour to fall asleep, keeping my intent. A short time later, I woke up again almost instantly. I felt frustrated that I couldn't sleep as I had felt during meditation that lucidity could be achieved easily. As I was now fully awake, I decided to return to my meditation room. But things were not as I expected. There was a slight change to my room. The color of the walls looked different. I also felt slightly drowsy and then I realized I had experienced a false awakening. I closed my eyes expecting to find a dream again, which worked. I became aware again in a very strange lucid dream scene. To break the lucid dream and enter into full OB, I focused on the ground right in front of me to achieve clear waking consciousness. From the ground I looked at my hands and then to the ground again. I became irritated by the fact that I couldn't shake off the drowsy feeling and that I still had not the clarity I normally get by going through this ritual. Finally everything became pin sharp. I could see every single grain of sand in front of me with absolute clarity. I was fully awake in what I instantly identified as a lower dimensional counterpart of Earth. Before me was a square covered in grass in the middle of a strange town I did not recognize as a counterpart of any town I knew. What I was sure about was this was not a very elevated place. This became clear when I looked at the people who looked ordinary, exactly as you would find people in any town on Earth. Apart from the rather drab atmosphere, this is a giveaway as on the higher dimension people generally look more attractive. I watched a group of men and women crowding around a man in a captain's uniform who was trying to capture their attention in order to entice them on a sightseeing tour on his 40-foot cruiser, which was moored to a jetty just behind him. I approached and mixed with the group. Trying clumsily to strike up a conversation with a couple next to me, by asking them whether they knew that they were dead, they looked at me as if I was some kind of a simpleton, so I simply took that as a yes and moved on. The guy with the captain's hat was busy flaunting his boat trips, trying to persuade the crowd to join him for a pleasure trip. Most boarded his boat over a little landing bridge. The atmosphere was not very bright, but dusky, without any sunlight, and the water was quite dark, with the waves gently reflecting back that twilight. The river cruiser had an open deck on top of a closed one. The open one had filled up first. It was covered in a gaudy pattern, well finished, but a little bit twee for my taste. The bridge too was open. I guessed the captain could talk to his passengers simply by turning around. After everybody had boarded, I addressed the captain and asked him why he was doing this, and he told me that most of the people taking the trip were new arrivals in the land of the dead, he said with a slightly sarcastic grin. He told me he made it his job to welcome people. Most don't have a clue what is going on, and some may even think they are dreaming.